Denver is a place for white people to have fun, not black people.
Welcome to Decolonize Everything. My name is Rebecca Mendoza Nunziato. I'm a mestiza Chicana woman who's been raised in predominantly white contexts in Colorado, in the land of the Arapaho, the Cheyenne, and the Ute. And I've been educated in Eurocentric thought. But I've had some awakenings. All of a sudden, housing just isn't housing. And food just isn't food. There's a complex history of colonization, of domination, capitalism, and of oppression. So Decolonize Everything podcast is here to begin the conversation about decolonization on a wide variety of topics with a wide variety of voices, to support this new consciousness and liberation in all areas of our lives. I hope it feels like an opportunity to learn and get perspectives and to really submit our individualism and our colonized selves to this deep excavation and examination and interrogation so that we can decolonize everything.
I am Laquita McCauley. I'm originally from Alabama, but I've been in Denver for a little over 10 years. Raised my kids here. I really have really learned Colorado through the city. I moved to downtown Denver, so I got to experience all the excitement of the Broncos games and the Six Flags. Yes. But I also got to see the other side, right? Like the disparities, being across the street from millionaires, but there's public housing, and watching gentrification happen right in front of me, and you know, seeing the kids in my community and go across the street and see the stark differences between kids in other communities. So I decided to get involved in some way.
Yeah. What were your main ways of getting involved?
Well, I will tell you the most exciting and my best memory is becoming the candy lady.
Hey, yes.
The best candy lady Colorado has ever seen.
Ever.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I brag about that more than any of my college experience. I really loved being the candy lady.
You were an entrepreneur.
I mean, I had to figure it out, right? You had kids and you had to take care of them. And I decided to, while they were in school, to go to school. And I needed to also make money. I just saw a lot of kids who couldn't afford to go to Elidge's and get the funnel cakes. Like, they only went on field trips or things like that. So that's what gave me the idea to not just be a candy lady just selling candy, but I wanted to make funnel cakes, the things they saw at the Pepsi Center. Like, I really wanted them to have snow cones and for it to be affordable.
Yes.
For them.
Yes.
It's a lot of the reason why I think I gained the trust of the neighborhood, too, because I really genuinely loved doing that. I got to meet the neighborhood through the children. And that was the best experience, and especially the ones that, you know, were 11 with piercings in their face, or, you know, the ones over there cussing and jumping the fence and doing all the bad stuff. I seemed to connect with them. I was amazed on how the kids who were the most mischievous were the biggest leaders out there. I saw in them what I saw in myself a lot of the time. People didn't see you, didn't understand how smart you were. And so you start behaving that way. So I connected mostly with them, but I was most surprised about how other cultures, even though we weren't the same culture, even they, we all still kind of had something in common, which is that we needed each other. Everyone isn't the same in these places. And I just love the community that I got to know through them. I mean, I could just picture all the fun that we had. I mean, the kids that would be dancing, we would see all kind of things.
Contest,
the flips. Yes, oh. the they would put on little yard sales themselves, or they'll bake some sambusas.
Yeah.
So I got to learn about the henna tattoos. Like,
yes,
there's so many things.
Henna.
We got to go over the cultures. Mm-hmm. We bonded. Yeah. It was the best job I ever had.
And that was what was so beautiful, was all the things that can divide us. And there was, you know, it wasn't like some magical wonderland. There were still really hard things and really hard conflicts. But all the things that are supposed to divide a community actually brought people together. And, like, people leaned on each other. And we gathered in ways that were so generative and so positive in the face of so many challenges.
And I mean, it's just like you're in the middle of this crazy world, yeah. And we created our own little bubble, you know. And what's weird is that the world was would talk about it as these people in this place, you know, this is how they are. But meanwhile, we're eating snow cones and coming up with recipes and doing dances and protecting each other out there.
Yeah. So you talked about kind of the gentrification that you could see happening all around the community in North Lincoln. Like, you could walk across the street and it was another world. Yeah. And I think one of the most toxic things about gentrification is people don't realize that what was there before the nice new high rise was really beautiful. People think like, oh, this is just an improvement, and they don't see what was lost.
Actually, it was not an improvement. What I saw was now the kids that felt this is their community. I'm not even from here. And for me to notice that and how fast it was happening, it amazed me. But those same kids I were talking about the kids who they say are menaces to the, you know, the school system or the society, right? These kids were my kids. These kids were great kids. And as soon as the gentrification started happening, now they have someone outside of their homes or somewhere else telling them they don't belong. But they did belong. This is their spot, and that makes them angry. Kids don't know what it is that they were feeling. I remember my son getting a bike. We had been out there probably for about 5 years, and him and his friends would always ride their bikes. Like, I mean, they would ride their bikes. I would close my eyes. They'd be doing tricks and flips, and they were really on these bikes. So I always invested in his bikes, and so did the other mothers, because it's okay. And I remember when they redid the park back there, and then they started gentrifying a bit. And I remember him getting pulled over, like four cops just pulling up on him, asking him where he got his bike from. Like, all of a sudden, like just one summer, they just started getting harassed. I would say he was about maybe 14 at this point, 15. And he was shocked. They started just messing with him about different things, jaywalking, just little things. And my son was a child. And so, and he had been out there for years, and he goes to school out here. This is where we go grocery shopping, our community. And all of a sudden, I also had to worry about now people looking at him, and we have to have the talk about how he's a black man and how a young black boy, and how they just do that. And he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, and some of that carried over to school, right? Because you were like, I'm going to get you the best education I can, and then tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, that was an adventure. So sometimes as a mom, you want to give your kids the better opportunities, and you think the better opportunity is not that failing school in your community, even though that's where your kids' friends go. And I know that I'm in public housing. I couldn't really afford this. But the sacrifices that we do, a lot of us mothers do in public housing, is to try to find better schools. So, yes, I tried private schools. I tried charter schools. And it was some of the worst experiences ever in my life. It let me know as a mom that I was appreciated where I lived. I was going to school, and I was respected by my peers mostly in school. But once I got my kids in these charter schools and private schools, I was put back at the bottom of the totem pole. No one really saw me for, look, she's trying to do what's good for her kids. And actually, we just entered another level of judgment, and we started at the bottom all over. It was not fun. It was not fun. And I say this, we did not survive the school system in Denver, my older two. I ended up pulling them out. My oldest, I put him in Job Corps. And I'm going to tell you, I always say, if a woman like me can't make it as hard as I tried, that I just don't understand how any other person out there is really supposed to make it. Now, I do know that there are kids out there who do make it, and I really appreciate those parents, but I say they're lucky.
The whole system's working against that, yeah. You know? Like, yeah. Oof. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I know those have been really painful realities here in Denver. Yeah. People don't see that when they think about Denver, you know? Yeah. When they think about gentrifying,
I didn't hear about these bad stories because I was a parent, right? So my kids would have to come home. They would experience it. And I would have to have these horrible conversations with my kids about why that joke was not appropriate. Why maybe that teacher shouldn't have spoke to them that way. But again, after, you don't want to be the deviant parent because you want your kid to go there and you don't want to be a problem. So once I finally did speak up, I wait so many incidences before I finally speak up. And I go in there and I try to speak white. I try to act white. I try to speak really calm, and nothing worked for me personally.
It is the systemic thing, and people think of it as individual kids that like don't want to do a good job in school. That's not it.
That's not true. We can look at Greenlee Elementary. They were giving stipends to teachers who were first-year teachers who had never lived in the projects, never been. They're coming from all around the, you know, other cities, and they're putting them in our community, first-year teachers, so that they can get a deduction in their student loans. So they come here with, and then, I mean, this is an immigration, a refugee state. So in the projects, you also have the refugees. So there's like four or five different languages. You're under budget. The building is hot. There's not enough books. They just didn't care. I remember they had airplane fans in the hallway, and they put the school year back because the building was simply too hot. Meanwhile, I was working at Cherry Creek Schools and teaching kids how to work with iPads. And it was just it was the craziest thing for me as a parent to be working in an affluent school system and coming home and having to take my kids and send my kids to these type of schools with teachers who are very sweet, by the way. They just were unequipped. They did not know what they were getting into. They didn't understand the different languages. And you would always have one or two teachers who are great, but they were overworked. You had a principal that was going from school to school to school to school who didn't care, just trying to get a check. The superintendent was on vacation for 6 months out of the school year. So they weren't available for complaints. And it was just a lot of obstacles. It's a lot.
No, and it's, I mean, yeah, it's such an interesting stark contrast that you were working with these kids in Cherry Creek schools and trying to be like, how do I get these opportunities? Not, and because you are a community minded person, you're not just like thinking about your own kids. You're fighting tooth and nail for your own kids, but you're also like, I know that kid on the block. I know this kid on the block. And we've seen, unfortunately, a lot of the kids that we'd hang out with in North Lincoln lose the opportunity.
Yep. Very smart kids.
Yes, very smart kids who loved math and science and could be wonderful STEM people. And like
doing art, singing, dancing, were so talented, drawing, everything. And so that's kind of where I picked up with them, was I noticed that no one in the community really looked at these kids. Like, his pants may be sagging, but this boy can probably speak French. He can probably speak two languages. You just don't know until you get to know them. And I'm going to be real with you. I think that they were easier to deal with and to talk to than most adults. I really, really loved them. But, yes, it was a big difference. And it was heartbreaking at times. I learned to, when I go to work, clock out and just be at work. But I couldn't help but think sometimes and see the privilege and just see, even the throwing all of the food away at the end of the day, just every little thing, just all those things. I'm like, I could see kids at home that could really use
you've
that.
You've seen the spectrum. You've seen Denver, like the fullest of Denver, which is like these extremes, right? And you've also, I feel like we also saw that the way the schools work, the way that the churches work, the way that a housing authority works is very much white saviorism. It's very much like, oh, poor you. It's not, no, you're brilliant and the system's working against you. It's like, oh, poor you. Like,
I've had respect. I've seen some places, some programs come out there for school supply drives and turkey drives and Christmas drives. But then where are they when we need them to take up for these children?
It's one thing to drop off a backpack. I call it drive-by charity.
Yes. Good analogy. I like that.
Yes. Exactly. Because it is. It's just like, bye.
Yeah. You know? And then I kind of didn't appreciate that, right? Because you come out there and these kids are thinking you're like Santa Claus to them. And so I didn't appreciate that. And then you'll be gone until the next holiday. Like, don't get close to my kids out here and acting like they're the best. And then you're not showing up again. I've had my kids on billboards. We've been with the mayor. We've done some really cool stuff. But guess what? None of them came to their home in the projects. None of them saw. I had to take them there. I was riding the bus to do these things with the billboards. You know, the mentor was always there when the cameras were there. But when he needed someone to talk to, when I'm trying to fight him from the community and not to go out and do these things, those mentors weren't available. They're only available when there's a mic and a camera.
If you could dream a little bit with me, what's like a radical vision for the way that community would work, whether that's in North Lincoln or where you're at in Aurora? Like, what are some pieces of the big picture?
One, I think that the community that you live in, the ownership, the home ownership, the business ownership, the policing, everything needs to reflect that community. We should not have all white men coming to patrol North Lincoln from Castle Rock or from surrounding cities. We should not give them stipends, and we should also, so I would love for all of these entities to look more like the community. I would love for us to have our world and have our own world. So just like if we go down to Lodo, I was trying to explain to him about the difference between 16th Street Mall and Lodo.
Yes.
It's the same street. But guess what's the difference? We got the Taco Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all got the Union Station, mm-hmm. You know.
Yep, so, we've got the cops, you have the private security.
Absolutely.
You've got the move along security.
So I think that if we can't come to your community and feel welcome, I think that you should stay out of our community, because mm-hmm. we have a lot of dope, smart,
yes.
intellectual people who are capable of doing so. Again, the system is built up to knock us down while we're teenagers and young adults. A lot of our black men are hit with felonies and things like that prevent them from doing certain things. But if we tap into what's good out there and we utilize ourselves, we just kind of, everyone should be welcome everywhere, but since we are not welcome, let us create our own world where we are. And we need if there's going to be a new store, it won't be Inc. It won't be Starbucks. It will be Quita's Coffee Cafe.
That's right.
You know,
yes.
We need to definitely hear our names and see our faces more in our kids, to see our names and faces more on buildings. And in places of leadership, teachers, principals, and all of that. And by the way, we're very, very capable of doing that.
Oh, hell yeah. And that's liberation, right?
Yeah.
Like, liberation is, like, from within. And it is, you know, there's a kind of jargony word I remember learning, which is asset-based community development, which is just as simple as saying, like, look, we got it. Like, we have all the brilliance. We have all the resilience.
I was running a store out of my living room.
Yes.
I was cooking and catering
yes.
from my living room.
Yes.
And I still maintained a home. It still mm-hmm. felt like a home, and I really had to. And there's 50 other women out there just like me. There are people that we never saw because they were working as teachers. And I mean, we're all essential. Most of us are essential workers out there. So we know how to do it. If we don't know how to do anything else, we know how to make it, and
yeah.
we know how to make it work for our kids.
Yes. Wow. You know, yeah, I feel like a lot of what we've talked about are like these – it's like two different, but you could say like two different Denvers. Like, there's different experiences of Denver for different people.
Oh, yeah.
What is the thing that you think that you see maybe every day that others just don't see? Like, what is the gift in your way of seeing Denver?
So I have a friend here with me, and I was just talking to him about, yeah, he was talking, I was talking to him about, you know, what things to do in Denver, right? And unfortunately, we're from the South, me and him. So I had to explain to him that Denver is a place for white people to have fun, not black people. I've seen so much anarchy and so much craziness go on down there by that baseball stadium. They literally walk in with open containers, driving, hanging out of their cars, you know? But for black Americans, it's a place for you to work, keep your kids tucked in, but there's no black culture and no place for us to really gather and be safe together and have a good time. The Jazz Festival, a lot of people of color go up there. It was shut down due to COVID for the older generation. Believe this or not, we love things like jazz. We love art. We love a lot of different things, not just rap. I mean, you can even look. I even watched the Broncos players, some of the Broncos players. They would be coming home from practice or Broncos parties, and the black Bronco players were being pulled over and you know, ticketed. But I'm pretty sure that they weren't the only one that had something to drink.
Not the only ones doing it.
Absolutely. So it's just not a place for black people to really have a good time. So that's the reason why you have a lot of these neighborhood parties now, the teenagers are having, because it's nowhere for them to go. And if it is, it's run down. Police are harassing around. They're not there to protect.
Yeah.
You know.
Denver's a place for white people to have fun. This podcast is produced and edited by me. Huge shout out to House of Pod for the recording space and all the amazing training over the last year. You can follow us at Decolonize Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and Decolonize Pod on Twitter. I'm Rebecca Mendoza-Nunziato. Join us again next time for Decolonize Everything, the podcast.